Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. Stay ahead of all the big games in the best league in the world, the Premier League. With the latest odds, form guides, expert opinions and more, the fans are the players at Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com, 18 plus, begambleaware.org, T's and C's apply.
Hello friends, it's the Game Day podcast from TalkSport with me, Sam Matterface, for the ultimate Premier League review of the weekend as we look back on the nine Premier League games that have taken place over Saturday and Sunday in the company of the TalkSport football correspondent, Alex Crook. Hello.
Hello.
Big United fan as well, but we won't mention that until a little bit later on. And the assistant editor of The Mirror, Darren Lewis.
Hello.
On the way, Erik ten Hag, Erik ten Weeks, if he's lucky. Another battle at the bridge. Anthony Taylor becomes centre of attention again. Plus, West Ham struggle to find a way through the Forest. It's all on the Game Day podcast from TalkSport. Yes, week two of the Premier League season. Oh, it's getting hot in here, so take off all your clothes. Actually, you two, probably best if you don't. But the Premier League living up to its heatwave in more ways than one. What a sizzling weekend of football we had. The heat too much for Antonio Conte and Thomas Tuchel. That's for sure. It's a game that we'll get to in just a few minutes. But other highlights from the weekend from you both, please. And Crook, you can stay away from United. We know it's a touchy subject. He was out last night. He couldn't concentrate on his big party that he was at because he was so depressed about Manchester United's state. So just things that are positive, I think, for the first part of the show. Darren, what was a big positive for you?
A terrific win for Nottingham Forest. I expected West Ham's settled side to go there and win. I did think that Forest had signed too many players and that they could be in danger of becoming a bit of an unbalanced squad, a little bit like Fulham did when they were last in the Premier League. But they were organised, they were well coached, as you'd expect from a side managed by Steve Cooper, and they were absolutely superb.
Yeah, what about you, Crookie? I was particularly impressed with the impact of Onana of Everton. He came on, he actually changed the game actually more ways than one. He gave the ball away for the second Aston Villa goal and then created a goal for Everton. But I think going forward, he's going to be a terrific player. Big positives for you this weekend?
I'm going to give a shout out to Ralph Hasenhüttl. Rumours in the media in the week that he'd lost the dressing room. Didn't look like a manager who'd lost the dressing room in the second half. Made some positive changes. Players clearly fighting for the shirt. I thought Sekou Mara made an eye-catching debut. Good goal from Joe Aribo. And an important point for Southampton from 2-0 down.
Oh, South Coast friends. Lovely. He once said, when we were talking about managers, you know, Ralph's the kind of bloke you just want to go for a beer with. Isn't that right?
It's true. That's how I judge all my managers. Would you have a pint with him? I'm not sure I'd have one with Ten Hag at this moment.
No, I don't think he'd let you because if you dared to have a day off, he'd probably cancel it and bring you in to make up for the terrible performance that you put in at the weekend, inevitably. What a weekend it was. And on TalkSport, it all went off.
Equalised for Tottenham and a scrap happening on the bench here. Chelsea 1, Tottenham 1. Chelsea are absolutely furious. Both benches are out of the technical areas, squaring up to each other. Real fury in the crowd. Real fury among the Chelsea players. Thomas Tuchel is dancing down the touchline in celebration. Chelsea back in front. Chelsea 2, Tottenham 1. It has been the spiciest of London derbies. He loves a goal in a London derby, Harry Kane. And he's got one right at the end here. Conte is absolutely delighted. Tuchel cannot believe it. Antonio Conte has been sent off at the final whistle here, as has Thomas Tuchel. It has finished Chelsea 2, Tottenham 2. The most heated, the most spicy, the most extraordinary London derby in the early stages of the season. I have never seen anything like that. All of the headlines will be about the bad blood, and it looked like bad blood between Tuchel and Conte at the very end. The gloves came off. It has finished Chelsea 2, Tottenham 2, but we haven't heard the end of this.
I repeat, and this is not important. If there is a problem, the problem is between me and him.
Do you regret what happened with Antonio Conte at the end?
No, there's nothing to regret, guys. Arguments, I mean, we were fighting. He was fighting for his team. I was fighting for my team. Nobody got insulted. Nobody got hurt.
Let's start with Sunday afternoon, 4:30, Chelsea 2, Tottenham Hotspur 2. I mean, first of all, let's just say it was a terrific match, a brilliant, brilliant spectacle, an encounter that gripped you throughout the course of the afternoon. It really was terrific. The main talking point, obviously, what happened towards the end of the game with Tuchel and Conte getting in each other's face. It's all a bit spicy. I know some people will say immediately the reaction, the reflex response to that is, oh, we don't want to see it. But there's part of us that kind of does, don't we, really? I mean, we enjoy a little bit of need, a little bit of passion, a little bit of a competitive spirit. And then there's the decision that stops Romero from being sent off when clearly he should have been. That will come into sharp focus. How did you both see it? Start off with you, Darren.
Well, that decision will be all over the back pages of tomorrow's papers. The pictures from that are self-explanatory, and the bad blood will be there. It's interesting, actually, because for us guys in print media, we're sport for choice. United were obviously head and shoulders the big story that we're going to be across the back pages tomorrow, because Eric 10 months, as everyone's been calling him, bit of a disparaging nickname. But
months? He'll be lucky to get 10 months.
Well, indeed. It might even be weeks. But the mess, the chaos, United was a fairly straightforward story, but the fireworks at Stamford Bridge have matched that. So, yeah, I thought what happened at Chelsea was a fascinating game, because they looked as though they'd run away with it. But the character that I've been talking about, that Conte's instilled into that team, was brought to bear. Also, the tactical change you made, going to a 4 from a 5 and throwing on Richarlison, that's why you buy somebody of that calibre, so that you can bring on genuine quality to change games. And I think Romero, very, very, listen, not fortunate. It was a stone-cold red card.
Yeah, it was a red card. Look, he pulls Cucurella's hair, drags his hair, pulls him back and pulls him onto the floor. It is violent conduct. Maybe you can argue it's not enough to be deemed violent conduct by the VAR, if you're really being generous. Mm. But either way, it's definitely aggressive behaviour, which is a yellow card offence. Therefore, a second yellow card for Romero. Therefore, a free kick to Chelsea, not a second corner. Tottenham down to 10 men. The second goal should never happen. I mean, that is an aberration of the highest order from the officials, isn't it, Crook?
Yeah, and I think what's interesting, there's a conspiracy theory amongst Chelsea fans that Anthony Taylor doesn't give them too many particularly favourable decisions. And actually, Thomas Tuchel was asked about that in the build-up and played it down, didn't want to buy into that narrative. I think he was buying into it by full time when he suggested that maybe it isn't a good idea for Anthony Taylor to referee Chelsea again. But it was Mike Dean, I think, who was on VAR, who should have spotted that hair pulling. And I think it was enough for intervention from the VAR room. So that was a slightly strange situation. As for the incident at the end, I loved it. You know, a bit of passion on the touchline. There were no punches thrown. But it seems to be a theme of the weekend, doesn't it? Look at me in the eyes when you're talking to me, because that was the issue that Thomas Tuchel seemed to have with Antonio Conte. Yeah. They were shaking hands and he wasn't facing him. So at least we're all looking at each other tonight on this podcast.
Absolutely. And, you know, if Steven Gerrard is listening, we're looking at you in the eyes and asking you to pick us, please. Tyrone Mings obviously did that because he played at the weekend as well. We'll get to that in just a while. Look, I don't get me wrong. I'm not going to moan about decisions too much, because you get and you don't get some. But the fact that there was also a foul in the lead up to the first goal does sort of fuel those ridiculous, as they might be, conspiracy theories. The fact that both goals come from mistakes from the officials is not going to help Anthony Taylor's course, really, is it? I mean, you know, I know it was a little bit far back, but
That should have been spotted initially by the linesman, the referee. They were on the scene. They were close enough to it. They didn't need to have VAR to help them out. And I know that they wouldn't have gone back that far anyway. So there was no way that a VAR would get involved in that. But the referee and the linesman should have seen it in the first place, Havertz being fouled in the build-up to the second goal. Obviously, Jorginho doesn't help himself by being an absolute idiot inside the penalty area, flicking the ball back, dragging it up and trying to get past two Tottenham players in your own box. That's a little bit naive from him, but he had a bad game, actually. And right from the very start, he looked like he was going to struggle. But I thought Chelsea were excellent all over the pitch. They were better than Tottenham. Tottenham surprised me how passive they were. I thought the one thing you can say about Tottenham is impressively, they came back and stole a point. But I mean, as far as the performance was concerned, I was surprised how passive they were.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think it highlights, and to be fair, Antonio Conte alluded to it afterwards, that there's still a lot of ground for Tottenham to make up, particularly on Liverpool and Man City, but maybe on Chelsea as well. But I think my other takeaway from the game was, as well as Chelsea played, their lack of a number nine. Kai Havertz has missed an absolute sitter just before Reece James scores. Looks as if Reece James is going to get him off the hook, but they end up dropping points late on. And I wonder now if we will really see their interest in Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang ramp up. I think Thomas Tuchel publicly has spoken about his relationship with a player. I think they need a proper centre forward. I just don't think Kai Havertz is going to cut the mustard.
Yeah, they definitely do need something in the goal scoring department because they missed too many chances. It's been a theme of the last 3 years, Darren. They need to do something about it. And if that means spending over the odds now, they've got to do it. Actually, now, looking at the way that the defence is balanced, it's probably more essential that they get that end of the pitch sorted out than the other.
Well, that was something I spoke about in the very first podcast of this season. Well, we were doing them even while I was out in America. And it was a question I asked Thomas Tuchel directly because they had that interest in Robert Lewandowski and Barcelona beat them to it, just like they beat them to every other player they went for. And Tuchel was saying at the time, no, we're okay. We can play Raheem there. We've got Broya there. We can play Havertz maybe there, but none of them can shoulder the burdens of scoring goals in the manner of a Salah or a Haaland or a Nunes. And so, yeah, it's absolutely right that they're looking for someone. The trouble is there's no one out there. Aubameyang will have to come in and do it. He's a good striker. It's a big ask.
It is. It's going to be a big pay packet as well to get him out of Barcelona. That is for sure. Look, I think overall, Chelsea performed better than I expected them to. Tottenham performed worse than I expected them to. It's still only two games into the season, so let's not get too over the top about either of the performances and see what happens over the next couple of weeks. But I'm sure there's plenty of frustration from Thomas Tuchel that his team didn't get over the line today. Not as much frustration as there might be at Old Trafford and at Carrington, where Manchester United were dragged in on Sunday to train again by Erik ten Hag after losing on Saturday night by 4-0 against Brentford. Now, when I started the preview to this game on Thursday's podcast, I began with the words, I fancy Brentford to get something from their first home game of the season, but then again, they're only facing Manchester United. It was kind of a little joke, Darren. But actually, that's exactly how it played out, isn't it? I mean, it was an absolute joke from Manchester United. I don't want to bore everybody with another long-winded Manchester United inquest. We've done those. So instead, I'll ask you some quick questions about where the blame lies after you tell me how good you think Brentford were.
They were terrific. Matthijs Jensen, the best player on the pitch. And they were organised at the back. Brian Mbeumo, composure personified to score that final goal. And Ivan Toney's couple of assists, but the one for Mbeumo's goal, outstanding. And an all-round fantastic team display. And I think it's right that we spend a couple of minutes giving them the credit that they deserve because they were excellent, as Brighton were last week. Nobody is afraid of Manchester United anymore. Last week, we talked all about that, all of us agreed that Brentford could get something out of this. I think it will get worse for them. The players, for me, do not respect the manager. We saw it against Rayo when some left before the end of the game. I cannot remember any top six side. I can't even remember a Premier League side where that's happened in pre-season before, let alone at a club the size of Man United. And also we saw it in the performances against Brighton and Brentford. Those players are not having the manager, and I think it's going to end in tears.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in just a moment. Brentford, though, are an example of a really well-run club, aren't they? You know, recruitment, coaching, business acumen. Since 2012, they've spent £152 million on new players. They've sold £175 million worth, which is a net profit of around about 23 million quid. In the same period in which Manchester United haven't won a title, they've won a title in 2013. But after that, since Fergie retirement, they spent £1.35 billion on new players. They've sold £380 million and their net spend is roughly £970 million. I mean, the contrast couldn't be more stark, could it? And it was an horrendous day. David De Gea mistakes in quick succession. There was a rumour that the players said they couldn't see each other because their new third kit was so close to the colour of the grass in the sunshine that they were blending into the floor. I mean, it reminded me of the old Sir Alex Ferguson Southampton grey kit sort of suggestion. I mean, it was hilarious, to be honest with you. I mean, they are terrible kits, but I mean, they're not that bad. Bad challenges, worse defending, but here are the quick questions. Mid-table teams in Holland aren't a patch on Brighton and Brentford. Do you think, yes or no, Ten Hag has misjudged the Premier League? Darren?
Yes.
Crook?
Yes.
Tactically, he's been done twice in 2 weeks. The difference physically in the pace and the fitness of someone like Welbeck, Tony and Mbeumo has been stark to that back line. What on earth is going to happen when this team come up against Darwin Nunez, Mohamed Salah, Roberto Firmino, God forbid Erling Haaland? They're going to get absolutely killed, aren't they, Darren?
Not necessarily, because I think that it might well be that they raise their game against Liverpool. I think they'll lose, but I don't think they'll get... Listen, I could be wrong because they got annihilated last year.
Can't wait for this to be
trying to be respectful.
Tuesday morning.
I'm trying to be respectful.
Don't worry about that.
I suppose my big feeling is that it's against a smaller side where United still think they're the United of old and the complacency sets in. That's where the results are really bad. But to be honest with you, I don't think United are... They have the players, but they don't have the work ethic to win any game right now.
Darren says he doesn't think the manager is up to it. He says that it's going to end in tears. I mean, for turning around
Sam. I don't want this to be one of those podcasts where I keep interrupting you all the time. But it's not that I don't think he's up to it. I think he's a very capable manager. He clearly has established a very good reputation. But with the players that he appears to be targeting for this league, and his inability to basically make demands that leave him with a settled squad to begin the season, just like the other five teams in the top six, it concerns me that he doesn't really get Man United and the demands of turning them back into what they once were.
Which is a really nice way of saying he's not up for it. but ultimately... He is a bit of an issue. For me, he's a bit of an issue. And I worried about this when he came in from the Eredivisie because tactically, it's a very different league. And the idea that he's played Christian Eriksen as a false nine, then as a central midfield player, deep-lying central midfield player, invoked this system, determined that they must play out from the back. When David De Gea does not have the ability to do that, has never had the look of someone who's comfortable with the ball at his feet, to insist that he tries to attempt to play out for the back was only ever going to end in tears. Also, this is a guy who's walked around with a megaphone for the last God knows how long, telling everybody how he expects his team to play. As a result of that, Brentford, Brighton, everybody else knows what to expect when Manchester United turn up. And if you don't vary it or don't have the ability to change it in game, then you're going to find that they've got a plan for you. And Brentford certainly did.
Yeah, but I think the players have to take some responsibility because it was pretty clear from minute one that however they've been set up to play, it wasn't working. David De Gea trying to play out from the back on the second goal, he should have had the wherewithal to know that that wasn't on and it should have gone long upfield. So I don't think it's all on the manager. What
does worry
me... But
know your players, he can't do it.
Yeah, no,
he's
I agree with that.
He's never been able to do it.
I agree with that. So therefore, they should have kept Dean Henderson and, you know, made a bold decision to change the goalkeeper. He should have made a bold decision to take the captain's armband away from Harry Maguire. He should have made a bold decision on week one not to play Fred and McTominay. 10 of the 11 that stunk the place out against Brighton started against Brentford. What did that tell you about consequences or lack of over poor performances? Because these players have been letting the club down, they've been letting the fans down for a prolonged period of time, yet they keep getting picked week in, week out. I thought he would be that strong-arm character. I don't think he is. I don't think the players respect him. I'm already hearing whispers actually struggling to communicate with the players, that maybe some of the players not buying into Steve McLaren's return to the club either. This is 2 weeks into the season. I agree with Darren. This is going to get worse for Manchester United before it gets better. I'm not sure Ten Hag is the man to turn it around.
Yeah, but I mean, it looks as if already, it looks as if it's doomed, doesn't it? It looks doomed because the players clearly aren't responding to whatever it is Erik ten Hag has asked them to do. I think you're right about a lack of bold choices on his part, which has really shown a weakness, I think. And I thought that last week when he did the halfway house with Ronaldo, that was the first show of weakness and subservience to bigger egos in the dressing room. And I think once you've done that once, you're in massive trouble. You let any player show you, you show any player any sort of weakness, they'll take advantage of it. And Manchester United players certainly did. Ivan Toney certainly did. What statistics he posted yesterday? First time in a Premier League game that he's posted more than one assist. Most distance covered, 10.6 kilometres in a Premier League game. Most touches in the opposition box, chances created, and aerial duels won in the match. Well done to him. There is another statistic doing the rounds about the fact that Manchester United ran a lot less than Brentford during that game. But, you know, it was hot. On Saturday at 3 o'clock, Manchester City took on Bournemouth. 4-0, the final score in that game. Gundogan, De Bruyne, Foden and Lerma all scored. Lerma an own goal with 11 minutes to go. You might think, well, hold on a second, that list doesn't seem complete. Surely Erling Haaland should have scored. But he had to settle for an assist on his debut. One of only 8 touches in the game, Darren.
Yeah, doesn't worry me at all. This is one of the great players. He will become one of the great players in world football. And I think, as Guardiola said after the match, his job is probably the hardest in Europe right now because he has 3 players all around him denying him time and space. Now, I've got to say, when they signed him, I remember talking to you guys about the fact that when you have a point man, no matter how good he is, if he doesn't get the ball, he can't hurt you. Yeah. And I did wonder whether teams will play that way. The trouble is, when you play against City, there are other players who can hurt you, like Gundogan, like De Bruyne. And so I think as far as City are concerned, they won't have any problems if Haaland doesn't score. If teams open up and try to go toe-to-toe with them, those teams will have problems. But I think as far as City are concerned, there is time to perfect getting that understanding with Haaland right.
I did love the reaction that he gave off when Foden failed to square it to him in the first half. He was absolutely furious about it. And actually, Pep was furious about it as well. He basically said, you have to pass in that situation because you should know that Erling is always going to be there. Listen, they'll click, they'll get it right with him and they'll score more goals. I mean, they did win the game 4-0, so there shouldn't be too many complaints. And look, as Scott Parker said afterwards, it's not a game that Bournemouth would worry too much about because this is not their league. And that's true. They've got other things to worry about.
Yeah, I don't think it was only Pep and Erling Haaland who were furious with Foden. I think fantasy football managers up and down the country were as well because we all
picked him as captain. You got me 10 points. You got me 10 points. That'll do. 10 points is fine.
Could have been a lot more. But in terms of Bournemouth, 4-0 is respectable. And that's where Manchester City are at this moment in time. It's not an embarrassment for a newly promoted team. And at 3-0 down at halftime, I think they would probably have taken 4-0. Their games are going to be won and lost at home against teams in the lower half of the table. That's what will determine if they stay up. Doesn't get any easier. They've got Arsenal at home next Saturday. Then I think they go to Liverpool. So I think the goals against column is going to be fairly high for Bournemouth after the first month of the season.
Yeah, I mean, they'll be targeting games against Manchester United, not Manchester City, I would have thought. What a goal from Kevin De Bruyne, by the way. And I did love it when you said De Bruyne earlier on, Darren. It was a beautiful, deep baritone way of rolling that R. Just do it for me again, if you can.
I don't think I can remember how I did
come on,
it.
Come on, you know you did. You were De Bruyne. Was it
David De Bruyne?
That's it. Perfect.
The first one was better.
Yeah, outside of the right boot finish, absolutely terrific. No Grealish from the start, though, Darren.
Yeah, and you know, the pressure is on Grealish to actually justify that huge outlay. Now, to be fair to him, he doesn't determine how much he costs. His job is just to play. But, you know, when you're talking about players with that kind of price tag, you are expecting the kind of transformative effect that Van Dijk had at Liverpool, Alisson as well. And Grealish, the jury is still very much out on him. That said, he'll get the time to find his way as far as City are concerned, because Guardiola has that effect on the players that he brings to the club. Just a word on De Bruyne, though, 15 goals last season, and if he can continue in that vein, and we all know he can, I think this could be another big campaign for him, particularly if players are drawn away to Erling Haaland and opening up that space for him to do what he does best.
Totally agree. 19 attempts, 4 goals for Manchester City. And Kevin De Bruyne said afterwards, yeah, we can go up a level. Great. What else happened on Saturday on TalkSport?
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. There's a lot more to those 90 minutes than what goes down on the pitch. With the latest odds, form guides and expert opinions, you'll know the score with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus. BeGambleAware.org. T's and C's apply.
That when Steven Gerrard and Frank Lampard were two of the finest midfielders in the Premier League, and both will know that their CVs as a player won't buy them more time than anybody else. Watkins pulls it back across the face of goal, and Emi Buendia is there to seal it for Aston Villa.
And it's him again, Gabriel Jesus at the double, and it's Leicester's Achilles heel again, corners.
And both sides remain unbeaten at the start of this Premier League campaign. Full-time at the Amex Stadium, Brighton & Hove Albion 0, Newcastle United 0.
Man City have been outstanding. Man City 4, Bournemouth 0.
Mitrovic is saved, and the rebound comes out and is cleared away by Kilman. It remains 0-0 here.
And it's Southampton 2, Leeds 2. And I didn't see this coming quarter of an hour ago when Saints went 2-0 down. Kyle Walker-Peters.
Can you believe it? Brentford 4, Manchester United 0. Manchester United have capitulated here. This isn't the Manchester United of Sir Alex Ferguson. This is the palest fake imitation.
As Declan Rice steps up to take this penalty, the noise tell you it's been saved. There does go the full-time whistle. It is finished. Nottingham Forest 1, West Ham United 0.
Antonio Conte has been sent off at the final whistle here, as has Thomas Tuchel. It is finished. Chelsea 2, Tottenham 2. The most heated, the most spicy, the most extraordinary London derby in the early stages of the season. I have never seen anything like that.
Aston Villa 2, Everton 1, live on TalkSport Saturday lunchtime. Look, I thought Everton were second best for most of this match, but actually should have
stole a point towards the end of the game. They had several chances. They, a little bit like Chelsea, actually lacking a finisher at the top end of the pitch, Crook.
Yeah, it's a problem for them. It's probably why they were sniffing around Shea Adams, and I think they'll continue to try and push and probe that interest. I think they have an interest in Neil Mopay as well, although as of Saturday night, Nottingham Forest looked a more likely destination for him in this incredible spending spree that Forest are on. But I think they do need to find someone to fill that hole when Dominic Calvert-Lewin, as seems to be the case more often than not, isn't fit. It was a brilliant end to the game, actually. You're right about Onana, looks a great athlete, came on and had an impact in both boxes for different reasons. But I want to highlight Tyrone Mings, and you've alluded to it already, those comments that Steven Gerrard made after the Bournemouth game suggesting a problem between manager and former captain. I thought he came back into the team and there was a lot of pressure on his shoulders, a lot of spotlight on the England international. And he stepped up to the plate. It was a brilliant block that he made late in the game to really see his side over the winning line. So credit to his character and to his mentality.
Yeah, you've been slagging him off for years. And then when he got dropped from the team, you had to go at Steven Gerrard for dropping him. And now you've brought him back in again. You're his biggest fan. More flip-flops than a Havaianas store. But anyway, don't worry about it, Darren. There was a three-point saving block from Tyrone Mings towards the end of that game. Danny Ings on the score sheet. Buendia on the score sheet as well. Steven Gerrard will be a relieved man after, you know, going back to the end of last season, beginning of this season, a run of results that he wouldn't have been happy with.
Yeah, I think it was 7 defeats in 12 and only 2 victories in that spell and only 2 wins in 11 at home. So he really did need to put that right by any means necessary. And that it didn't have to be pretty, and it wasn't at times, but they did show a lot of character. They did show that they are playing for him. And I thought it was a very clever piece of management to play Ming so that that whole situation wasn't going to be the legacy, if you like, win or lose of this game. Now the club can move on. They're in a better place. I did think Everton were very unlucky not to get something out of the game. The talk is obviously that Chelsea have put in a £40 million bid for their 21-year-old forward, Anthony Gordon, who's got a huge reputation.
Their best player.
Yeah, Antonio Conte likes him as well. My question to the two of you, if you're Everton, do you accept £40 million given, as you were saying, Crook, the interest in Shea Adams?
No. It's got to be 50 at least before you even start thinking about it. No
chance.
For a
player who's only played 50 times, not got an England cap.
It's too good. It's too good. They've got nothing. They've got nothing up front. They've got absolutely zip up front. And if they get rid of Anthony Gordon, it does two things. It demoralises the fan base, who idolise him already. It robs them of probably their most creative asset at this moment in time. Now, look, maybe they'll smooth it over. Onana will do well. They'll get somebody else in. But, you know, who's going to come in and light up that team at this stage of the transfer window? Everybody in the top division is looking for a striker. You've already mentioned that they're few and far between. Where are you going to get one for £50 million? You know, unless Everton are in such dire straits that they need to sell in order to survive as a football club, which I'm not entirely sure is true, I think that they should resist all attempts to sell him. Doesn't matter how much it is, because I think it will do more damage than it will do good. Crook?
I guess it ultimately will come down to how much the player is pushing for a move. And you have to say that Everton aren't a particularly attractive proposition at this moment in time, even for somebody who's come through the academy and clearly has an affection for the club. This is Champions League football. This is Thomas Tuchel. This is Stamford Bridge. This is the big boy league. I agree with you. I think they need to be pushing Everton for a fee of nearer £50 million. I think if Chelsea make that bid, they've got a difficult decision to make and they might have a fight on their hands to convince the player that Goodison Park is the best place to be.
I think they've been incredibly unlucky, Everton, in the first two games. I think they should have got something out of the Chelsea game. They should have got something out of the Aston Villa game. And they've lost key players to injury along the way. Dominic Calvert-Lewin. They've lost Yerry Mina. They've lost Ben Godfrey. And on Saturday, they lost Abdoulaye Doucouré after half an hour of that game as well. I think it's been unfortunate the way they've started the season. They've managed to still retain a little bit of credit with the fan base, despite the fact they've lost the opening two games. So I think losing Anthony Gordon will start to to hurt and heap a bit of pressure on the board, because the board aren't popular as it is. You heard about the protests in the summer. Certainly the board at Arsenal weren't popular for a while, but everyone's a lot happier now at the Emirates. After Arsenal beat Leicester by 4-2. What a great game. I was at this match. Gabriel Jesus was absolutely top draw. His first finish was amazing. He could have had a hat-trick in the first half. He absolutely ragdolled Johnny Evans. And he was terrific. I mean, what will he give Mikel Arteta's team over the course of the season, Darren?
Well, as we had the debate, didn't we? I think he'll score 20 goals. You didn't think he would do.
20 league goals.
20 league goals. Do you still disagree?
Yeah, I don't think it will score 20 league goals. I think it's really hard to score 20 league goals. I think, look, he'll get close to it. And I said to you at the time, I think he'll have a terrific season. I do believe that. But 20 league goals is something that's only done by the very, very best in usually the best teams. So let's wait and see. I hope he does it.
Look, I just think as far as he is concerned, it isn't just his composure in front of goal. It's his work rate. It's his movement. There are so many elements to his game. He's a winner and he's clearly benefiting from the fact that Arteta said to him, "You're my guy." And as you rightly say, he could have scored 4 goals against Leicester. On another day, he will. He'll only get better. I don't think he's even at full pelt yet. And that's
Some argue he should have scored 4 goals.
Yeah.
He certainly should have had a hat-trick because he missed a really good chance in the second half.
Well, indeed. And I think as he comes up against more and more of these sides in the Premier League that try to open up and play football, he will fill his boots. Arsenal look in terrific shape this season compared to last year. The documentary shows all the problems that they managed to solve last season, and they look much better for it. Younger, more vibrant, and terrific recruitment. I think they'll have a good season.
Zinchenko, Xhaka, Martinelli, Jesus, that left flank was absolutely dominant. The way they interchange and interact is brilliant. And I do think that, you know, Xhaka is going to end up having a great season because of Zinchenko. Because what happens is that Zinchenko starts off at left back, comes into midfield. Xhaka goes on into a more advanced position. It gives them an extra number in attack, and it creates an overload, which defences were struggling to deal with. But there were still enough wobbles to show that they're not the complete article yet. The Saliba own goal was comical. The communication obviously not there between him and his goalkeeper. Ramsdale had a few special moments where he tried to ensure that everything was kept a little bit interesting. I don't think he'll be happy about the goal either. A lot was made of Fofana's run with the ball, which was impressive. He went down the outside, took on two players, but he had a terrible afternoon, a torrid afternoon. Martinelli took him to the cleaners, and Jesus as well. And the rest of the list, the defence wasn't much better. How much pressure is Brendan under, Crook?
I don't know if he's under pressure from within the boardroom, because obviously he's operating under financial restraints. And I think he's operating basically with one hand tied behind his back, exemplified actually by the goalkeeper situation, because they've lost Kasper Schmeichel, not just a top character in the dressing room, but still a top quality goalkeeper. They've decided to replace him on the cheap with Alex Smith. He's basically coming in on a free transfer, someone who was training at Bournemouth a couple of weeks ago because he couldn't get a club. Therefore, they promoted Danny Ward to the number one position. He was at fault for at least one of the goals at the weekend. So people keep telling
He made some great saves as well.
But people keep telling me there's no financial problem at Leicester and it's just a case of balancing the books. That being the case, why haven't they gone out and signed a proper replacement for Schmeichel? Why were they actively encouraging Schmeichel to leave in order to get his wages off the books? I think it's an issue for Leicester because I just don't see how Brendan Rodgers could improve on what he's got there unless the financial landscape changes.
Well, it's an interesting point that you make, because bearing in mind the goalkeepers that were available this summer, 3 England goalkeepers were available this summer, and we all knew that Schmeichel was going to Nice, because we've known for a month or so that was in the offing.
Longer.
So where was the bid for Henderson? Where was the bid for Pope? Where was the bid for Sam Johnson? All 3 goalkeepers that, let's be honest, are probably an upgrade on Danny Ward. I actually think he hasn't done too badly, Danny Ward.
Is he a number one in the Premier League for a team that want to finish in Europe?
Maybe not, but obviously, as you've already pointed out, if they were a team that were going to try and compete for Europe, then they would be spending money in that area, and they're clearly not going to do that. So there is an issue there. Gary Lineker was pleading the case on Match of the Day, I think, over the weekend, suggesting that, you know, they produce a lot of their own players and then they get picked off and they seem to spend most of the summer waiting for one of the big names to go, and then they spend the money that they get from that to find new rough diamonds, shape them and then sell them on 2 years on. And I understand that point of view, but I don't think that's the issue here. There's something else going on, Darren, isn't there?
Yeah, I mean, it's quite fascinating, really, because I think that the financial tap appears to have been turned off. I know that might be a bit simplistic, but as Crook was saying, you know, when you're talking about not replacing someone of Schmeichel's experience with a like-for-like individual, you have to assume that at some level, someone somewhere has said, no, we're going to tighten our belts this time around. And you can understand why the likes of Yuri Tielemans isn't signing a new deal and James Maddison is interested in the interest from elsewhere. And Wesley Fofana wants to go to Chelsea because all of the clubs that are interested in those players are clearly on an upward curve, whereas Leicester appear to be flatlining.
Arsenal crowd were pretty entertaining. I must admit, I sat almost in the crowd on a Saturday afternoon, and they gave Jamie Vardy a little bit tongue-in-cheek after he was penalised for, not given the penalty, basically. VAR overturned
it. Wasn't a penalty. It was the right decision.
It was never a penalty. It was a ridiculous decision not to give it in the first place. It was a poor bit of refereeing. But the crowd were really entertaining. At one stage, when Yuri Tielemans was substituted, they said, "We'll see you next week. We'll see you next week. Yuri Tielemans, we'll see you next week." Because he's been linked with a transfer there. And there was a couple of other funny songs, but I can't repeat them just in case.
You're probably better not.
Just in case I get myself into trouble. Brighton 0, Newcastle 0 was live on TalkSport 2. Perry Groves said this was a brilliant game, full of high energy, but very little goal mouth incident. Four of the last seven meetings before this weekend had finished level, so I don't think it's too much of a surprise, but this one did too, Darren.
Yeah, I was really surprised actually by Newcastle's performance. One shot on target. They really did struggle to create anything meaningful despite the quality of their forward players. Defensively, they're very good. And we all know, we've talked about their defence, particularly at the end of last season. They brought that into this season, but they need more in the final third. Conversely, Brighton, I'm surprised that they're still struggling to score goals, even though they've tried to do one or two things in the transfer market. They brought in the striker Under from Union Saint-Gilloise. He scored 26 goals last season. He hasn't found his stride yet. Let's just say that he only had a couple of minutes at the end of the game last weekend. And same again this time around. But they do need to sort that out because they can't have another frustrating season of struggling in front of goal. Neil Morpay, of course, going to Nottingham Forest.
Well, this was a terrific game. Brilliant match, befitting of the return of Premier League football to the City Ground after 23 years away. West Ham will feel hard done by that they lost 1-0 to Nottingham Forest because they had a goal disallowed that probably shouldn't have been disallowed. And then you've got a situation where Dean Henderson's goal seemed to be living a charmed life. Crook, you commentated on this game for TalkSport International. How did you see it?
Well, first and foremost, it was a brilliant occasion. First City Ground Premier League game in 23 years. The Backstreet Boys were number one the last time Nottingham Forest hosted Premier League football. It was full
What song
capacity.
Was it, Darren? What song was it? What song was it, Darren?
Quit playing games with my heart.
No, I want it that way. Go on.
And the fans were well up for it. I thought Forest started the game like a train, actually, for the first 10, 15 minutes. West Ham didn't get a kick. Then slowly that Premier League experience that Darren spoke about in the preview podcast came to the fore. I actually think the decision to disallow the goal was probably correct. I think he's almost clotheslined the player to the floor, Mikel Antonio, so I can understand why that wasn't given. Then they get a bit of fortune with a goal. I think Jesse Lingard probably should score himself, which annoyed me because I backed him as first goal scorer at 10-1.
Despite having got him for the last 2 months.
Absolutely, yeah, maybe that was his revenge on me. And then in the second half, I mean, what they hit the ball about three times, West Ham. Poor penalty from Declan Rice. He's missed his last two now. I doubt we get the opportunity to make it a hat-trick. And, a couple of key interventions as well. I thought Henderson played well. The standout performer for me was Lewis O'Brien in the middle of the park.
Someone terrific.
Making the step up from the Championship to the Premier League. Looks like he's been there his entire career. A little bit worried about Worrall. I think he got isolated at times against Saeed Bemrahma, so maybe that could be an issue. But they signed three players on Sunday, Nottingham Forest, and they're still looking for more. I mean, they might have 20 new recruits by the end of the window. Do we have any financial fair play concerns about the way they're doing their business?
Alex, you know, in the time you've been talking, they've actually signed another player.
Evangelos Marinakis did finish last season at Wembley in the sort of special box. He wasn't in the royal box. He had his own box, and Jim White went up to see him. And he said, I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to win the league or something. He's given it a good go, to be fair to him. He's putting a lot of resource behind it. He might not win the league, but he certainly he's putting his money where his mouth is. Emmanuel Dennis was announced at midnight on Saturday night. Very odd time to do it. I don't know what the press department were doing at that stage of the evening, but surely they had a very late night before a big game on Sunday. But yeah, look, I thought they did well. I don't agree with you about the clothesline from Mikel Antonio. Mikel Antonio is just stronger, bigger, and going into the box. Mangala stands in front of him. Mangala moved in front of Antonio. Antonio's got nowhere to go. What's he supposed to do? Disappear and become the invisible man? He can't do that.
I thought it was excessive force.
He's just big. He's just big and powerful. It's not his fault. Mangala should have stood up to the task.
I'll tell you what, after this podcast, you stand in front of me and I'll shove you in the same manner and see if you feel it when you hit the deck.
Well, you've got no upper body strength, so I won't hit the deck. I think there's a case to turn around and say that Mangala actually blocked him off trying to get into the penalty area because he's running in behind with Declan Rice free on the ball. What if he'd slipped him in? I don't think it was a clear and obvious error, and I don't think it should have been ruled out. The referee saw it, said play on. If Cucurella's is a clear and obvious error and it's play on from Anthony Taylor, I think you can play on for a little bit of a chest barge. Crikey. Darren, do you want to intervene here?
Darren's the master of chess barges, so go on.
I actually agree. I mean, I was in the Premier League briefing before the start of the season. I think you both were too, but you were in different broadcaster ones. And the Premier League were saying that what they want is to make sure that was to not penalise opposition players every time someone went to ground. And I thought this was just, you know, when you try to go in one direction, someone goes in the same direction as you and you just bump into each other. I thought it was that. I didn't think it was anything malicious as far as...
You're just soft, Crook. That's the problem. You're just soft. You just turned into a softie. You'd be on the floor all the time. Spent too much time watching Manchester United and Ronaldo. That's the issue there. Henderson gave quite a big interview to TalkSport prior to the start of the season, didn't he? And actually, I think he probably needed to put in a big performance after coming up with strong words. And he certainly lived up to his own billing.
Yeah, he did. It didn't have to work particularly hard to say the penalty. It was poor effort from Declan Rice, but he guessed the right way. He made one excellent save to keep out Bemrahma curler in the first half and actually reacted instinctively to one of the West Ham efforts that came off the crossbar to claw away the follow-up header from Tomáš Souček. He was engaged with the supporters. He was almost saluting them after he saved that penalty. I think he'll be a key player for them.
Yep. On Saturday, Southampton 2, Leeds 2. I know Crook's got a lot to say about Ralph Hasenhüttl here after they came back from 2-0 down to level things up and take a point at home. He was under pressure. He made a lot of changes. Certainly, Sekou Mara, very good when he came on. Lavia looks okay in the middle of the park. But I'll tell you this, I watched this whole game back on Sunday morning and Leeds was so much better for 65 minutes in this game. It is unbelievable. True, maybe even longer than that. Excellent football. They don't have the quality to be a City or a Liverpool Leeds, but they will cause some problems for sides in this league, and they certainly cause some problems with Southampton. What they do is that obviously they full court press everyone in the opposition half when they've got the ball, but they're not afraid when they're playing out from the back to play long, straight passes through the middle of the pitch and get right up the throat into the opposition half. They did that really well. Now, sometimes that breaks down and then you get the turnover, and that's what happened with Llorente, who probably should have been sent off in the first half after 14 minutes. They committed a lot of bodies upfield. It turned over quickly and they ended up in serious trouble. But they've got some bright talents in that team. Aronson looks excellent on the right-hand side, drifting into number 10 position. Rodrigo looks emboldened. Bamford getting injured after 28 minutes certainly hurt them because he is important to that, holding the ball up, keeping them in possession higher up the pitch. You know, they're a good team. All their goals came that way from getting it right down the throat of the opposition. They do have one issue, though, and that's the right back. The right back was the reason why they conceded those two goals. He had an awful second half. He was getting dragged out of position. Gineppo, literally from the minute Rodrigo scored his second goal, Gineppo's licking his lips. They changed the formation slightly, Southampton. He's got a bit more room. I don't know if it was James or Rodriguez. I think it was James actually was supposed to be over on that right-hand side protecting Christensen. But Christensen, the second goal as well. Everyone talks about Mara and the brilliant pass. But it all comes from the fact that he doesn't bother challenging Che Adams in the build-up to it. Very, very poor performance from him. And that was a weakness for Leeds.
Yeah, well, defensively, I think they will still have problems this season. But I think they surprised me. I wasn't completely convinced by Jesse Marsh, even keeping them up at the end of last season. But I think they play a very distinct brand of football. He's clearly tried to do what Ten Hag has failed to do at United and got players that he knows can adapt to his system. I think they'll be fine. I think they'll keep Jack Harrison now. I don't see Newcastle paying the kind of money it would take to price him away. And obviously, he had a big hand in both goals. But I think they're going to be fun to watch because I think they'll concede goals for the reasons you've alluded to. But I think they'll score plenty as well, even though they can't rely on Bamford to stay fit.
Okay, Darren, he tells us, the Southampton correspondent, that Ralph Hasenhüttl is fine and dandy and there's going to be no problems. I think they've won one of the last 15 Premier League games. How is he fine and dandy? And is it? I mean, I don't actually think he deserves loads of credit for Saturday's comeback because I think the mistakes came from Leeds United and wilting slightly. But he obviously deserves a little bit of credit for changing it up and bringing on the substitutes, both of which affected the game.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he talked about a sensational reaction after the match, and he was absolutely right because there were two goals down. And as you were saying, they were being completely outplayed. And I always think in situations where there is smoke in the papers about a manager's position, the reaction of the players in the game, whether it's the same day, the day after, or the day after, is always very telling. Yeah. And I think that the performance and the players and the show of character and the goals, of course, Kyle Walker-Peters and the new signing Joe Rebo scoring the goals, it suggested to me that he has a group of players that are still willing to fight for him. It might well be that there are some players that aren't playing, that aren't having the manager, but this was a point that arrested a run of five consecutive defeats. And I think it could be the most priceless point of all the points he picks up this season.
Yeah, and of course, if he does lose his job, it means that Manchester United won't have to pay any compensation for him if they decide to hire him.
You are so harsh with this anti-Ralph agenda. Listen, very quickly, because you don't want to labour on this game too much, I think Southampton know he isn't perfect. I think they know that his communication, particularly with those players that he isn't picking, could be better. The relationship he had with his coaching staff of last season was non-existent. I think that has improved as well. If you look now, he's joined in the technical area a lot more by his assistants. That hasn't happened in the past.
At the moment, the board
are behind him. Obviously, if they keep not winning games, the pressure will intensify. There are members of the Southampton fan base who I think would welcome a change. At the moment, I don't get the impression there's the appetite at boardroom level to do that. And I think Darren's absolutely right. The players certainly played for him in the second half.
Our biggest snooze fest of the weekend award goes to Wolves 0, Fulham 0. Wolves goalkeeper Jose Sarr ensured that this ended 0-0 and everyone got a point after making a save from Alexander Mitrovic from the penalty spot late on. 80 minutes on the clock when De Cordova-Reed was brought down by Nouri. I don't think we can have too many complaints about that decision. Mitrovic stepped up, Sarr saved it. The biggest complaint I've got is why did no Fulham player follow it in? Because they were so convinced he was going to score. No one went in after it. It was aberration from them.
Yeah, and it could be a big miss. If they'd have followed up that draw against Liverpool with a win at Wolves, that would have been a really satisfactory start to the season. I think it was Adebayo Akinfenwu said that maybe Mitrovic would get most of his goals at home and struggle away from home. He was non-existent in the game before that missed penalty. So maybe the big fella has a point. Wolves need a centre-forward. They created so many opportunities. The miss from Morgan Gibbs-White was one of the sitters of the season. So it would surprise me if Wolves don't bring in another striker between now and the window. But as we've spoken about regularly on this podcast, the options are limited, but I think they'll look to strengthen. I'm told they're interested in Michy Batshuayi. He seems to have gone cold. So I'm not sure that he'll end up at Molineux now.
Mitrovic should have been sent off though, Darren, shouldn't he?
Yeah, a bit of a naughty challenge. I got to say, I'm disappointed for all the people who had him in their fantasy teams because
Crook.
Everyone believed after Liverpool last week that he was a shoo-in to bang them in. And it just goes to show that even what though we tell people not to get carried away after the first weekend, people always get a bit carried away after the first weekend. But he was lucky to stay on the pitch. I think this time around in the Premier League, he has more confidence. He looks a bit leaner for me, although I'm not really in a position to extend on those matters. And I think as far as his confidence is concerned, I think it's still quite high, but I'm not sure he should be on penalty duty.
Okay. Thank you very much, Darren. Thank you very much, Crook. That's it from us. We're back on Thursday afternoon with a look ahead to all the Premier League action that's happening next week, including Manchester United against Liverpool, which is live on Talk Sport, which Crook can't wait for. Right now, we're all off to pull each other's hair, Cucurella, Romero style. But don't worry, we will keep within the parameters set by Louis van Gaal.
The Premier League All Access podcast is proud to be brought to you by Ladbrokes. The latest odds, we set them. Form guides, we've got them. Expert opinions, we share them. The best fans in the world deserve the best. Be match day ready before the whistle blows with Ladbrokes. Odds update on Talk Sport with Ladbrokes. Are you in? Let's go. Play at ladbrokes.com. 18 plus, begambleaware.org. T's and C's apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.